Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, The Collective Wisdom. Joan Adams and I host this show. Tonight we will be reflecting on the shows that have gone before and what we have learned. So much brilliant info has been presented here, and often it pays to take some time to pay attention to what has passed and what is yet to come. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. And here is Joan Adams. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Kate. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. This is going to be interesting.
Yes, it is. And Betty is in the chat room. That's great.
That is good.
She certainly is a part of this show, isn't she? For
she
sure.
She is. She is a faithful follower. We love you, Betty.
We do. I had an interesting revelation. As you know, we're doing this customer service presentation at my work, and something very, it's so strange, because at the end of the program, one of the customer service people that I'm working with had put up a film called The Secret of You, which is taken from the movie The Secret, and she has seen The Secret, and one other of the customer service people has seen it, and I suspect others have seen it as well. And that seems to me, it just seems like The Secret has gone mainstream in a way that, and you know, this is why a lot of us were brought together, is because of that movie, really. Huge internet communities have formed around it, and when you think about it, you know, even the thing about Pat O'Brien's community is not necessarily, surrounding The Secret, but his best friend is Joe Vitale, who was in The Secret. And I think it's just fascinating that that would be something that people are talking about, the law of attraction in the general world now. And so, my next question would be, there must be, what is the next frontier? You know, what is it that we as a community can start working on so that in a few years those things will be mainstream? You know what I'm saying? Because our show is largely, new world paradigms. You know, we talk about things that may be talked about on the internet, but aren't necessarily talked about in the regular world. I mean, you can't go to the post office necessarily unless you live in California or Oregon or something, or the West Coast in general, and talk about these things.
Although I think people are talking about it, as you say, more. And I think The Secret was kind of like the coming out of,
yes,
of this kind of thinking. Because, you know, I've been in Unity for over 25 years, I guess, now.
Oh, yes.
And your training, certainly, from your mom and your parents was pretty much the same thing. So, you know, you have that basically, but you think maybe you're the only one around. And and then suddenly it's kind of like gone public.
Yeah.
So when we have a guest, I always think, that's an interesting little piece of that pie. And we've talked about that before, too. But each person that comes on seems to have their own little slice of truth in it all.
It is so true. And another thing on this customer service thing, which blew my mind, and as I related it back to our internet experience is that they had a whole film, little film, that we showed, or we have a film that we showed, but I really wasn't a part of choosing this film, of all the quotes that Zig Ziglar likes. And I am, we probably all have seen his son on Twitter, and every now and then he and I will say something back and forth, or I will retweet something that Zig Ziglar's son has put out there, and he'll thank me. You know, so it's like a small world experience, and maybe these thoughts that we are discussing here on the show, and you know, we started on March the 3rd, which was my birthday, and I think we've had at least 40. I haven't counted the shows, but it all started back. Our very first person, I'm bringing this up now, might have been, well, we were talking about how to lift your spirits any time. That was just you and I talking, I think.
Oh, we did Banish the Blob. We did it with Betty.
Yeah.
That's
and then we talked about inspiration on Squidoo. And then after that, we had a few shows that were you and I and Betty and were mostly talking. And then Pat O'Brien was our guest on the 28th or 29th of March. And then Amanda came on, and Trapper, and Todd Silva, and Pat Hicks, and Robert E. Lee, and so on. A lot of the people from the Milagro world came on. So, and then it just sort of got, you know, wherever we felt, wherever we connected with people, we brought them on the show. And it's been a very, very fun. It's never been a drain, you know. It's been a lot of fun. And I think we've learned a lot.
We did
talk about Banish the Blobs, yeah,
mm-hmm.
At one point in there.
Betty and I were talking right before the show about what we've all gotten out of it. And I think exposure is a strong part of it, too. I mean, I've just mm-hmm. been exposed to so many things that I had never heard before. And it's like an awareness.
Yes.
And you're much more knowledgeable, as I've told you, than I am with most of this. But, you know, Amanda's on and she's talking angels. I understand that. I can understand that stuff. But some of the others, I haven't ever heard that take on it before. The lady that talked about the spiritual grid, for instance, and, you know, other guests, and I'm sitting here thinking, ooh, I haven't heard that. That's all news to me. And to hear it and begin to just get a glimpse of exposure to it is important.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes our listeners are in the same place. You know, they are learning along with us, which is nice, too.
Yeah. I think about every time we have a show, no matter if it's on the Giant Squid Open Mic or especially the Giant Squid Open Mic, but especially also our show, everything, so there's always something I'd like to implement into my life as a result of listening to what people have to say.
Mm-hmm. And the Pray Rain, the whole Pray Rain Journal thing, I mean, that whole experience, experiment to me it is, that thing works.
Yeah, what it does seem to get you into a mindset of just thinking a lot more positively.
Yeah.
And just rejecting the negative, because it's just so, you know, listening to people's tones of voice and knowing if it's positive. You can just tell if you want to be drawn to somebody because of their positivity or not. And all these things bring us into greater awareness and raises, I think, I just speak for myself, that my vibrational field just feels like it's a lot higher now than it was when we started.
I think that has to be true for both of us.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know what I'd like to hear you explain to me again, and we might as well entertain our guest with. But go back over the easy world. I love
yes.
that whole concept.
Well, what I got out of another thing that blew my mind about her, Julia Rogers Hamrick, was when I asked her, I'll say this and then we'll talk a little bit about Easy World. When I asked her what she did just as an example, what she did before she came on our show to relieve stress. And she said, I went outside and I burst into tears.
Yeah.
And there was just, that was so liberating to me. And it surprised me. I didn't expect her to say that at all, for one. And it was liberating for me because crying is something that I do like to do, but I think I suppress it. And since that show and since she said that, it was almost like a total revelation and a key that unlocks something where I feel, I really feel like if I want to cry, I'm going to cry. I don't need a Kleenex. I can just blow my nose on my sleeve. What the heck? And if I have to, you know, snot up, I'll even, you know, whatever. I'll use somebody next to me's shirt, whatever. That was so cool. So, yeah, Easy World. Her book is coming out, and she has asked us to come back on the show, so that'll be great.
Yes,
to get her back.
Fascinating.
Oh, she is wonderful. And she also wrote a book called Recreating Eden, which I'm slowly reading that book. It's not the easiest read because it takes you sort of into a dream state as you read it. And then it's hard to stay awake, not because it's boring, but because it has this way of taking you into another realm of understanding.
Oh.
And you know how that is. It's a great book. So this Easy World is, I think, a fascinating concept in that we can live an easy world and we don't because we don't know any better, really. If we knew any better, we would be living there.
Is it a matter of proclaiming it, like affirming it?
Yeah, I think so.
I think
more we proclaim it, the more things will come to us, like new jobs that we love, and maybe money will start flowing, and we, as soon as we start changing our beliefs about, I probably am about to go down into the dog barking realm, but I'm going to do it. So, as soon as we start getting rid of our false beliefs about money, I think that's really key.
And we affirm that we live in easy world. Am I correct?
I think so. I think we do. I think it is an affirmation. A total affirmation. One that we need to remember. It's something we forget. We need to remember. And sometimes you just have to do these remembering exercises every day so we continue to remember and not forget.
Yeah,
I liked her. I thought she was really cool.
Yeah, she was very practical.
Yes.
You know, and she's deep as a river, for sure. But the easy world concept was very a practical approach, and it's a matter of remembering to do it.
Yes.
In my mind. I mean, you know, it's like when we first talked about Banish the Flaws, we said, you know, we know all of these things. We just don't use them when we need them. And we need them all in one book. And I'm beginning to feel that way about all of these guests we have on the show. It's like we have all of this wisdom. Now I want to see it in a little book so that you can grab it and go, oh, yes, I remember. This is what I need to be doing now.
Yes, in fact, what we have, we could actually write a little book about what we have gleaned from every show.
Yes.
That means we'd have to really listen to each show again, which I love to do.
I think it would be helpful to people. And then we could also provide links to these various guest websites for somebody that wanted more than just our opinion. But to have just a series of, of exercises and ideas that are ways to improve your spiritual life. There's just no way around that. That's what we're doing, I think.
Yes, I think so. So when this thing came to me about what is the next frontier, certainly what we are talking about on this show is sort of the next step to the secret. Everybody that, like for instance, the Good Vibe Coach, Jeanette Maul, has been doing Law of Attraction work for long before The Secret. So a lot of these teachers, and she was, not one of the teachers that they mentioned in the secret, but she certainly is one of the teachers of the law of attraction. And there's many, many people like that who work with it, work with it, work with it, and they live it. And what can we learn from those who live it? Because, you know, we're showing this film, The Secret of You, to a group of people who don't know how to live it. There's no doubt about it, that the people may have seen The Secret, but they really don't know how to live it. And they're young. And I work with a lot of youngsters, really, and in comparison to myself and to you, because we're a little older.
Right.
So the wisdom of living, the wisdom of having experience, and then drawing the lessons from what we have learned and implementing those lessons into our life. And, you know, it's a process. That whole thing just about crying seems simple. What our chaplain speaks at the customer service event that we do, and she said that when our patients cry, we should not give them a box of Kleenex. And my immediate thing is, as a nurse, my job is to make people comfortable, you know, fluff up their pillows. Well, you know, our job is a lot more than just that, but first and foremost, you want to serve them. You want to make sure they're comfortable. When somebody cries, you want to make sure that there's a box of Kleenex nearby, because that is something that is thoughtful, maybe. But the point of the matter is that when you give somebody a Kleenex when they are crying, they will stop crying.
Right.
You give them even if you put down a box of Kleenex, they will stop crying.
Right.
So that's
as if you've said stop. Right.
Mm-hmm.
As if you've given a command to stop.
Yes. So
yes.
So that was something I thought about, and I agree that I'm not. It might be good to just lay a box of Kleenex around for people so that they can choose to get their own Kleenex. But for me, and not while they're crying either. You know, just always have a box of Kleenex around just in case.
Right.
And let them make that choice.
So they know that it's there.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I think so, and I, you know, people too say things like, "Oh, well, you can't feel that way." Well, oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
You know, we feel what we feel, and can't feel that way is just a ridiculous thing to say, because we do.
Why would somebody say you can't feel that way? Just in general, you mean? Oh,
and comforting. And comfort.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you shouldn't feel that.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, it's true that when tragedy occurs, people say things because they don't know what else to say. They mean well, but they just don't know what to say, and that's why they say those things. Certainly, it's not mean-spirited in any way, you know.
Oh yeah, I know that. I'm just
yeah.
I'm just saying, for me personally, I try not to say that anymore.
Yes. Yes.
You know, I try to stay away from that whole that whole train of thought, and let people be with their emotions where they are. And that's hard to do sometimes because it's uncomfortable for us.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Good not to say anything sometimes.
Right. And being silent is, you know, that's, oh goodness, I wish I could remember the poem, but there's the one about what do I want for Christmas, and it ends with, and a friend with whom I can be silent.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I just love that whole sentence, because sometimes that's the best thing you can be, is just
yeah.
to be with someone in their pain, in their
I
grief.
Know.
When our brother died, and we've talked about all of this before, but it was a shocking death, and there was a minister, a local pastor, who came to the house, and in fact, he wasn't even our father's pastor; he was just a pastor there in town that we loved, and but constantly that whole time in there, he was all over the house, you know, and he wasn't preaching and praying and all of that. He was present with us.
Yes.
He was.
So you mean people were in different parts of the house and he would go from group to group?
Oh, yeah. He would just kind of appear. At one point, I was out on the front porch by myself and he came out there and sat beside me. He was just kind of there, you know. He wasn't demanding that anybody do anything. He was just with us in it. And
that's so sweet.
I'll never forget it, you know. It was a very comforting thing because his presence itself was a comfort.
Yes. Oh, that's a beautiful story.
Yeah, it's very, very true. You know, anyway.
Sweet, very sweet, yeah. Well, that kind of sudden death is so hard for a family to comprehend.
Well, and for the neighborhood and for the, you know, for everybody. And
for everybody.
Nobody knows what to say or, you know. But the important thing, and Betty and I have talked a lot about grief, and you study grief, but I think so often we hesitate to go because, I don't have any food ready or I don't have any, you know, and the main thing is to go
and be
with. And that's so hard to remember, you know.
We were
brought up, you take food, you know, you take food. You know, working women now, they don't have the time all day to prepare food to take somewhere. But, you know, go anyway.
And people don't necessarily feel like eating either.
No. And in the South, I don't know about your area, but down here, it gets ridiculous because of the huge amounts of food that just come pouring into the house. And the thoughtfulness is wonderful.
Oh, that is.
But so many
times. Hospitality.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing I think I remember eating the most during that period, and that was 20 years ago, for goodness sake, but somebody brought in a container of rolls, and I would grab a roll and a Coca-Cola, walk away, or put a piece of ham in it or something, because nothing really tastes good, you just want something stable. But anyway, that's beside the point, but... Yeah, important to be is what I was trying to get to be present, to be with, to sit with even if they're crying, to get back to where we were, and not to try to make somebody stop. That's a gift. Did I lose you? Hello,
Jen.
Yeah, you are back.
That was an interesting thing because I always wondered what would happen if I was cut off. Would the whole show go blank forever? But it didn't. I was able to just call in and resume it. So that's something that I never knew.
We learned
what would happen.
Something. Well, Betty was saying she could hear me, but she lost you. So
I
could still continue to talk even if you. And it would seem since you have the switchboard that it would throw everything off. But obviously,
it threw me off. Yeah. So that was a learning experience. So I didn't really want to learn, but it wasn't such a bad thing because it just says call back.
That's nice to know.
Yes, it is.
We've learned something. Betty said no. She hit a place where she didn't hear either of us. So, but that's okay. It didn't take but a minute.
So it's back. Yeah.
Right.
And so we were talking about. What you do in the South, I think we do that here too. People bring food. There's a lot of hospitality and making people feel, in the shock. People want to do something, and often it's the food. Even though maybe I think people appreciate the food very much, even though they may not feel like eating.
Right,
they may feel like eating too. Yeah,
but the guests. I'll tell you something else. That while we're on this subject, that someone did for us, with several people did. They, of course, this was all in Pendleton, which you've heard so much about. But several people had come in and spiffed up my dad's house, knowing that all these guests were going to come in, which was wonderful. You know, just run the vacuum, dust the furniture real quick, you know, spiff up things, and brought in, like, paper supplies, which, you know, I've never seen paper be so welcome. But we had a house full, and all of that paper was a beautiful gift.
Yes.
From toilet paper to paper towels, paper plates, paper cups, you know, all of that.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It was a wonderful thing to do, and I've tried to remember that also, that even if you're like me and you don't cook or you don't have time to, then certainly paper supplies are always welcome. And anything that is instant to eat, there are always children around, and children are always hungry.
Definitely. You have to feed the children. Yeah.
You have to feed the children. And so it's nice to have food available for them, especially pickups, you know. But,
and Mookie just came in the room, and he wants us to know that we always have to feed the dogs.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. Well, and taking care of the pets is important, because at a time that, sometimes they get forgotten.
I know, my goodness.
And Dad didn't have any at that time, but I'll tell you something else I'd love to hear your input on. At that same time, of course, my family came home back to Rock Hill before I came home, but when I came home, the family dog had died. Which
that
I
is double
was,
whammy, wow.
Yeah, but it was as if, I don't know exactly how I want to say that, but it was almost a part of the wave, if I can say. I was not shocked by it.
Right.
Almost as
up,
a symbol.
Was the dog close to your brother?
No. Did not know him. But it was a symbol of our grief, almost.
I think.
If that's not, you know, too far out for you.
No.
Yeah, just, you know, the timing of such a thing, and, you know, to come home to that, and of course the children were upset. But maybe, okay, I'll explain it to myself. Perhaps that gave them a way to cry without having to be strong for us. There we go. Got it. Okay.
I think so.
Yes.
They probably were not quite relating to the whole deal, and they were feeling pain, but they weren't able to express it until the dog died.
Well, everybody was being so strong. Everybody was being strong for everybody else.
Wow, that's interesting.
That's heavy. Mm-hmm. That's interesting,
but that makes sense. Did you just realize that?
Mm-hmm. Just thought of that for the first time. 20 years after the fact. A life is interesting, isn't it? I just
That's why it's great to reflect, and that's what we're doing here tonight.
Yeah.
Not just about the show, but about everything.
Mm-hmm. Dogs, yeah, about life lessons.
Yeah, dogs and animals and in general, and your mockingbird and all this sort of thing.
Oh, wow, and I have not seen that mockingbird since our radio show.
Wow.
So real interesting. Now, we've had a lot of rain, and she may come back, but real interesting that she disappeared. I really think it was your mom.
Yeah, I think it could be.
I think it very well could have been.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, you know, our show with Sheila was fascinating in her talking about what our role is and you know, changing the world and stuff like that. Yeah, and Betty says it's another thing to remember is never too late to remember a loss. A treasury is a memory of a loss. When a member of volunteer board she was on appeared a couple of weeks after Mom's death with hot out of the oven cinnamon rolls. Yay!
Yes.
That sounds very good.
And after that couple of weeks, people have a tendency to forget.
Mm-hmm.
I know once I took a friend to lunch a few weeks after her father's death, And I said, you know, okay, we're here. Tell me everything you hadn't dared to say out loud to anybody else. You know?
Yes, yes.
And we did. You know, we went through the whole thing. But you need that. You need that chance to tell it again without having to worry about the person who's listening.
Yes, yes.
You know, to relate it.
Have that person really listen.
Yeah. Listen and be and hear it and not judge it and not be in pain with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody that's just distant enough not to, you know, it's okay to say that and it's okay to feel that and it's okay to scream and holler and stomp and laugh and whatever.
Yes, yes.
The laughter was such a shock to me. Goodness. And I was relieved to find out that was okay, too, that we weren't all losing our cotton-picking minds at the time. Because did you see the movie Steel Magnolias?
Yes, and I would love to see that again.
Yeah, that's a great grief movie. But
mm-hmm.
at one point, they all get hysterical with each other and yell at each other, and then they just crack up laughing. And, you know, and you laugh
yeah.
about stupid stuff, you know. And that's relief, too. It's the next
yes.
thing tears. It's the same kind of emotional release.
Laughter is a beautiful thing.
And
very
it's
good
healing.
For you.
Very
yes.
healing, you know, in the right moments. That's why people
you
get
ever,
tickled.
Ever get into a thing where you laugh, and all of a sudden you cry,
yeah, yeah.
and then you laugh. That is amazing.
Yeah.
State of mind.
That's total. Yeah, that's total release, though.
Yes,
you know,
it is.
I haven't been there but a couple of times in my life, but it's, yeah, very healing to let go to that point.
Yes. Yeah, even just thinking about it makes me feel better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we do have a new guest. Hi, Nudges.
I just wrote that. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
But, yeah, just that whole grief process is, and the other thing I was reading, you know, some of our Squidoo lenses are deeply spiritual, but I was reading one the other day, Kate, was it yours? We were talking about when we walked through grief, it was you.
Mm.
That when we walk through grief, we are at a spiritual connection.
Is
yes,
so much
it wasn't
stronger. It. Yeah. Yes, it was like when you're in the middle of what the world calls a tragedy, you... the thing is, it's that people tend to see, if they're aware and they're open, and also because the grief opens their heart, they're aware of the miracles and they see the synchronicities and they're closer to a divine universal intelligence and that kind
mm-hmm.
of thing. And
yeah, you did say that
yeah.
in that one. Yes, you
yes,
did.
Yes, yes.
And I do think that's so true. I just, not that I want to be there again. I'm not saying that, but I do think we walk, when we're walking in that deep grief, it's a spiritual walk with more, oh, goodness, I hate to use the word joy, but it is.
It is, isn't it? That movie,
it
the 99 balloons with that family that had that child for 99 days, that is an amazing film. And, you know, the joy and that little baby looking
oh.
out there, even though the baby had a look of total intelligence about him. Elliot was his name. And then I said that because of that film, we now have a palliative care team at our hospital, which means that when a person knows that their baby will not live, will be born alive and will not live, then palliative care means that there's a lot of support for that baby to be born, to live however long, but there's no resuscitation efforts unless the parent wants resuscitation. You know, whatever the parent wants. But in general, if you know that the baby's going to die anyway, not to resuscitate is usually the way people choose. And then there's this tremendous outpouring of support for this life. That is on this earth for a very short time. And it's because of that movie that we have that program at our hospital.
It's such a beautiful program to provide.
Yeah. And as soon as we know, like a person is told during their pregnancy that this baby may actually die before it's born, he or she may die before it's born, and or he or she may live for 99 days or longer, you know. And then the parent can decide what to do. And if they choose to allow the whole thing to evolve as it will, as nature provides, then the palliative care team, you know, gets in the gear and does their work with supporting the family.
Oh, that's a beautiful, that's a gift, Kate.
Yeah.
I think it's real interesting. It's another place that you and I cross interest because, you know, Betty and I are writing a funeral book. We haven't had it out in quite a while. But for us to be working on that and you to be trained in grief, and it's real interesting that we all have that in common.
Yes.
That interest in making it as smooth and dignified as possible.
Yeah.
Without being morbid.
Yes.
You know, I tell folks all the time about Betty had done a family cookbook and presented it to us, and it had a, you know, you may have seen this, but at the front of it, that she wrote just a page full of family memories, just total family nonsense, just things that meant stuff to us, you know. And but at Dad's funeral, the minister read it, and there were giggles all over that church, you know. As people remembered with us, and it brought all of that back for everybody, you know, that had lived through those years with us. So it was really, really neat and special, and I think people are more willing now to do those things. For years ago, it was strictly a staid, you know, blah blah service. Now they're more personal.
Yes, a friend of ours died, a young girl, really, maybe 25-ish, and she was ill, you know, for all of her life. But then when she passed, she came from a very strict Roman Catholic background, but she herself was a pagan. And the family did not ignore her beliefs and her wishes, and they had a pagan wedding. I'm sorry, a pagan funeral. And I thought that was very big of them.
Oh, it is. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
very loving.
And I think it is something meaning that death is coming out of the closet, too. That is something that is very difficult in our society. People still don't like to talk about it. They're still terrified of it. But I think that maybe that is the next frontier. I'm trying to think of what the next frontier is. And I think, what is your funeral book about?
Just that is how to have one. How to have a personal funeral. And it's all the different ideas we've had over the years that we've seen. And we cut out unusual obituaries where, you know, somebody will mention their dog or this precious lady, and I carried this obit around forever. I hope it's still in our box. Did not know the lady, have no idea who she was, but she brought me lots of joy. But it said, Mrs. Jones will be missed by all of the ladies at such and such a parlor where they played poker.
Uh-huh.
And I just cracked up, you know. It was like, yes. You know, yes, she played poker, and yes, she had a ball, and yep, she's going to be missed by those folks, and that's very real.
Yes. Yes.
It was. And Betty says she's the director. Well, she's the director of them. She is
she's
the
director
general.
of the palliative care team of her hospital.
She's the director of the funerals. I
of
think
the
that's
funeral?
What she's telling you. We gave her a director's baton. We had two very close together, and we got very good at having funerals. That's where the funeral book came from. But we did give Betty a director's wand. That has to be what she's talking about. She can line people up. And I'm telling you, she could line people up.
Oh, hysterical.
Yes, that's what she's talking about. To go, you know, you go here and you go here and you go here, because, you know, you line up to go in and you line up to come out and you line up to get in cars. And I mean, she flat had everybody going where they belonged.
Without any trouble.
Oh, yeah, she's the director. She is the
now,
absolute.
I was going to ask, in your part of the country, do people believe in cremation very much?
It's just becoming more acceptable,
mm-hmm.
And that's what we want to do. But, yeah, it is, when I first started talking about it 25 years ago, a lady came to the house to sell us a plot, and I told her what I had planned, and, oh, she let me know right quick how terrible that was. Well,
well, she didn't get a sale.
No, but I mean, she did not like it that I was thinking that way. It just makes sense to me. That's just to me real practical, and you know, I've shed a body that I don't need anymore, and you know, what I would hate to see would be for my kids to spend a fortune on some kind of box to put me in that could be used to educate the children or feed them, for heaven's sake, or whatever, the grandchildren I'm talking about now, or even the next generation. I mean, to me, it's just such a gross waste. We have such a barbaric attitude about death in this country.
Yes.
I mean, I just think I've almost gotten to the point that it offends me. I guess it does offend me. Hadn't said that before, but yeah, it's just kind of gross. It's like, yeah, let's celebrate the fact that I was here and whatever good things I left, you know, and move on, you know?
I'm curious to know if there's any funeral directors in this country, or I don't know how they do it in European countries at all. I know in Ireland, of course, they have the wakes, which I think is a tremendous stride ahead in the way to look at people's lives. But in this country, I'm just wondering if there's any funeral directors who are somewhat liberated in the way they handle things, instead of making people feel guilty if they don't buy something for their loved one, like a gold, you know, casket.
Oh, I think in our town right now, cremation is a definite choice, and the funeral director offers that.
Mm-hmm.
He offered us that when Mr. Adams died, and that's what we did. Betty is warning us, and let me say this, regardless of what you do, it's very important genealogically that you have a stone, a marker, for future generations. So do that,
right,
regardless of the other. And she's saying, yes, awake. She wants a party. I know what she wants. She wants a big party, and so does Whitey. But, yeah, I think our general approach across the country is a little bit different. And I think as time goes on, I don't want it to ever get to the point that it's disrespectful. But to celebrate life is a good thing, to remember all the happy things. A friend of ours, he was the father of our son's best friend. And when he died, she had a party at the country club after the funeral, and they literally roasted him, you know. They all stood up. They had a ball, just had a ball. And I was out of town at a business meeting, but, you know, Whitey said over and over, he said that was the most fun. And so when people think about him, they don't remember his quote-unquote funeral. They remember all those happy memories that were shared that afternoon. And funny stuff and crazy stuff and, you know, real stuff. Not, oh, he was a nice person. Not all that dignified whatever, and he was a wonderful human being. But all the fun stuff, you know, all the crazy happy times you go through in a lifetime.
Oh, that's terrific.
And it's nice that people remember that, you know. I think that's a tribute to him. that people...
Well, do you think that perhaps there's such an unenlightened... In general, people are unenlightened about death. They're terrified of it. Is that, do you think, because people are, don't believe that there is life after death?
I think there's a cross there. I think it's a blend. I think some of it is that, and I think some of it is ignorance and fear, and none of us know what's on the other
side.
No,
we don't know. We don't know, right.
But it's kind of like my parents were real good about saying, well, you don't even need to worry about that because you're not going to know anyway. It's kind of one of those things that you just didn't. That you didn't get into, and my father was very blunt and direct about death, always.
Mm-hmm.
You know, death's a part of life, and he believed that with his heart and soul, and he preached that, I guess, our whole lives. I think the other part is people have so much guilt,
and
they walk around with it. I don't know how we've done that in this society, but we've trained people to walk around with all of this false guilt. That, you know, they need to get rid of before they get there to the end. I think that's a lot of it. I think just...
Well, I like that. That's true. And then it's a huge, it seems like a huge burden, but I understand that people who work, say, in hospice or people who purposely sit with the dying... That they're, and I've seen it with a few people that I've sat with who are dying, like my mother and my aunt, that there is a huge, the burden is just automatically lifted for them, and it is for the things that I've read about for other people. So it's not something that it just happens, but I think that to lift that burden of guilt is something that we can learn to do every day.
Right, and we have to. I got two things I'm going to here. Betty is reminding me on the chat that Dad had a living will way before it was the thing to do.
Yeah.
We all had to sign it. All of our names were on it.
Mm-hmm.
Long before that was the custom. But he was determined, you know. And his thing was, when my time comes, you let me go.
He sounds so wise.
He was a very wise man. Very wise man. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just had lived his life and had lived it well and had no regrets. And, you know, but he was very blunt about that from, goodness, I guess I was probably in my 20s the first time I signed that. Betty, I don't see you commenting, but I doubt if I was much over 25. First time I signed that, and that was a long time ago. But time has passed, you know, and people do talk about that more openly than they used to.
Yeah.
You said something, and I was fixing to go somewhere else. I lost my train of thought. I had too many things I was trying to tell you about.
Well, that living will is now law.
We
have to discuss it with every patient that comes through the door.
But, that's a new thing, relative,
right.
Talking about the last 20 years.
Yeah, it within, say, the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
12 years maybe.
Yeah,
yeah.
Betty's saying
yeah.
The first one she thinks she has is in the very early 70s. But he was ahead of his time. He was definitely ahead of his time.
He was born in 1912, was it?
Yes, same age as your mom.
Actually, 1912 would be my dad, and my mother was born in 1914.
Ah, okay. I knew they were right in there, that same
They
age.
Had children young, didn't they?
Yeah, mom and dad.
Yeah.
They were kind of late compared to everybody else, so.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, too, did you see the movie Flatliners?
No. Is it funny?
No. No.
No.
You need to see it.
Okay.
What these are med school students who are experimenting with death.
Uh-huh.
And so they die and come back and die and come back. But the thing they're faced with, or you're talking about why people are afraid of death, what they're faced with on the other side is any person that they've mistreated during their lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to make amends.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's true, though. That's true.
That,
remember, I did a lens on that Damian Brinkley fella who is from South Carolina. Remember that guy I did a lens on who, and I that he did he does some really creepy shows about radio shows. Anyway, he's a psychic since he's had this experience of being electrocuted. He was on the phone. The electricity went through the line, and he hit the roof, you know, the ceiling, and he fell mm-hmm. down, and he was dead. And he had one of those near-death experiences, probably after life. I don't know, because he died. He was definitely dead. And then that's not the most extraordinary after-death experience I've ever heard of. But anyway, for this guy, when he came back, he has an amazing story of what he learned when he died. But one of the things is that he had had that one of those reviews. And
yeah.
before he had that experience, he was a bully. And he, especially as a kid and as he was growing up, and whenever anybody made him mad, he would beat him up. And he had to go through everybody he had ever beaten up. I think he was a Vietnam War vet, and he had killed people in that war. And he had to make amends in that afterlife review, after death review or afterlife review, of everybody he had killed in those wars and families and how it affected villages. And he said he came back and he was totally changed. He saw things completely differently, and he changed, and he became kinder and saw the spiritual side of life, whereas before he was just a kind of a knee-jerking jerk, basically. He sounds
right.
like he
and
became
the...
a really neat person.
Well, and the love that we share does not go away, which is the other good thing for me. You know, the love does not die. So
yeah.
the love continues even. I want to go with just one more, and we're running out of minutes, of course. But my dear friend Peggy Shealy used to say, we have to deal with all of our stuff along the way. And that includes all of the guilt, all of the false beliefs, all of the stuff, all of these childhood tapes, all of the anger, all the rape. All of our stuff we have to deal with along the way, because if we don't, and we get to the end and we're in a nursing home, then we show out and it all comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Which I always loved that. It just makes sense to me. How many times have you been around nursing home patients that have mm-hmm. totally lost their minds, but they're just angry?
Oh,
you know?
Yes.
Yeah, all of that rage is going to go somewhere. So deal with it along the way, which made real good sense to me. I understand that. I've seen too much of the anger rage part of that, and I'm trying so hard to deal with mine along the way because I don't want my children to see that, you know. And I do think that's part of our job as human beings, is to deal with all of our emotions as we have them,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to, you know, to deal with them, to face them, deal with them, and move on, you know, forgive yourself and move forward.
Yes.
So that, you know, we are at peace when we get to that point in this life.
Yeah, forgiving ourselves is the big thing, and certainly forgiving everybody else, but I think we have to forgive ourselves first.
Sure we do. Sure we do. And yes,
mm-hmm.
Peggy was one of the wisest women I've ever known. And and she was right about that. In fact, the older I get, the more wise she is.
Mm-hmm.
She was, you talk about a lady ahead of her time. She was that. Because she was like the first mental health director, female mental health director, probably in the Southeast. She was just way ahead of her time with all of that.
Was she in South Carolina?
Yeah, yeah. She was mm-hmm. in Rock Hill. She was also a disaster. They call them go teams when there
uh-huh.
would be a tornado or a hurricane, say on the West Coast. She would be on the go team, and they would call her, and everything would drop, and she would go. And she was in charge of mental health. She was the one that started people talking about having mental health services for all of these people that were traumatized.
And post-traumatic stress.
Right. At a natural disaster. Children just have a time. They developed a little hurricane coloring book after Hugo that they used for, tornadoes and stuff, and the children, and dealing with that fear and the after, the PTSD, the after.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She was ahead of her time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But anyway, and I still want to send you her book, and I haven't done that yet, have I? I will do that. I just on my list of things to do.
Oh.
But
nice.
I did see one on Amazon. Somebody had one used, and I want to get that for you, and I will, because I think you would enjoy. Her mom was a nurse. Mm-hmm. You think about this. Peggy Shealy was almost 20 years older than me,
mm-hmm.
and her mom was a nurse.
Right.
And she has the journals from the nurse's notes from her mom's nursing days.
Oh, my gosh. Did anybody make that out of a book? Or make that
they
into
are
a
in
book?
They are in the book. They are in her book.
Okay. Nice.
She gave them to a nursing school somewhere, maybe somewhere in, I don't know. But she
mm-hmm.
she donated the actual book, I think, with the actual journal. But every one of those notes are in the book.
Good
and
for her.
Fascinating stuff to read, because they knew so little, and medicine has come a long way.
Right. She sounds like she had a good feeling for what bedside nursing, bedside medicine, compassion, kindness.
Yeah, well, her dad was a country doc, yeah.
She
made calls with him when she was a little girl, so she knew all about bedsitting. Betty is saying too that she's changed her to-do list to an opportunities list, and I love that.
Yeah, I like that too.
She's just done that in the last few weeks, and I like it.
A to-do list is kind of daunting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe that's what we need to implement into our business plan that we will be talking about soon.
Yes.
These to-do things are... It produces guilt.
Right.
And that's what we need to get away from is guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Shame. Guilt and shame, are the lowest rungs of the consciousness scale as far as David Hawking is concerned. And we need to rise our vibrations.
And get out of the shame thing. And see, that was a way of life for our generation. I don't know if it was for yours, but, we were... we're almost taught shame, be ashamed of yourself was one of the key parenting sentences, and not just with ours. I mean, that's just the way kids were raised in those days. Oh,
yes.
be ashamed, lower your head, all that.
Lower your head.
Lower
shame.
Your head, drop your head.
Well, what happened in our generation is that we rebelled, and we had the 1960s, and we had all the, crazy stuff that we did. Which changed the world.
It did. It did, and I've got a lens in my head about all of that, those years. And I would love for you to do one at the same time so that we could do them side by side.
Oh, please. Let me know. Let's do it. Yeah.
I watched a John Kennedy documentary the other night, and I was thinking, I really need to tell my story to my children.
Well, that documentary is interesting because it's all the lots of stuff has been revealed that came out of the archives just recently.
Mm-hmm.
Now that thing is, I couldn't watch it the other day because I had to go to bed, and I didn't want to go to bed thinking about the assassination. But
yeah,
I know what you mean. So we only have about 30 seconds left in the show.
Totally enjoyed it. Totally, totally.
I knew that we were just going to say whatever we wanted to say, and we may not have spoken too much about the show, but I think we did in the end, because the show has brought us to this moment, and now we will go ahead and think about the opportunities that will
arise. I
from
love that.
All of this, yes.
Thank
so
you,
thank
BR.
You, thank you, everybody in the chat room. Thank you, Betty Rush. And love to you, Joan.
Thank you, and love to you, Miss Kate.
I will speak to you very soon, and we will listen to the music for Mother and Child by our dear friend, Klaus Jensen. So here we go. Love to everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.